This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. The Biden administration says the world needs to prepare now for the next pandemic. We get more from AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
In virtual remarks to a UN meeting, Vice President Kamala Harris says all nations have learned a harsh lesson over the past year.
That the status quo is not nearly good enough.
She's urging countries to boost science investments and access to health systems and to get in position for surging vital supplies wherever needed.
So that every country can access personal protective equipment, vaccines, and tests.
In prepared remarks to the same panel, President Biden's UN ambassador says the world barely withstood this pandemic. It must be ready for the next one. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Meanwhile, AP correspondent Mike Rossia tells us California authorities disclosed the first reported case of a man developing a rare blood clot after receiving the J&J vaccine.
Officials at the University of California, San Francisco say a man in his 30s developed a rare blood clot in his legs 13 days after receiving the Johnson & Johnson single-shot COVID-19 vaccine. The man was admitted April 21st, complaining of escalating pain in his lower back and leg. Although initial imaging did not show the blood clot, blood work did show the man had the same syndrome as 13 other patients across the U.S., all women, who also received the J&J vaccine. Three of the women died. Seven remain hospitalized. U.S. health officials lifted a pause on the J&J vaccine Friday after scientific advisors decided the benefits outweigh the rare blood clot risk. I'm Mike Gracia.
A WHO chief, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, said Monday that the situation in India, where COVID-19 cases have surged, is beyond heartbreaking, and the World Health Organization is sending extra staff and supplies. This is VOA News. The White House says the U.S. will begin sharing its entire stock of AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccines with the world once it clears federal safety reviews. As many as 60 million doses are expected to be available for export in the coming months. The move greatly expands on the Biden administration's action last month to share about 4 million doses of the vaccine with Mexico and Canada. The AstraZeneca drug is widely in use around the world, but has not yet been authorized by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The White House is increasingly assured about the supply of the three vaccines being administered in the U.S. Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan on Monday imposed a nationwide full closure until May 17th, including a continuous lockdown, school closures, and intercity travel restrictions to curb a surge in coronavirus cases and deaths. Health Ministry data showed that Turkey logged more than 37,000 new COVID-19 infections and 353 deaths within 24 hours, sharply down from mid-April, but still the world's fourth highest number of cases and the worst on a per capita basis among major nations. Announcing the new measures after a cabinet meeting, Erdogan said that all intercity travel would require official approval. All schools would shut and move lessons online, and a strict capacity limit would be imposed for users of public transport. Russian authorities on Monday ordered the offices of imprisoned opposition leader Alexei Navalny to halt their activities pending what would be a landmark court ruling on whether they should be outlawed as an extremist group. The injunction from the Moscow prosecutor's office was another step in a sweeping crackdown on Navalny. And that's President Vladimir Putin's fiercest critic, as well as his organizations. The prosecutor's office petitioned a court this month to label Navalny's Foundation for Fighting Corruption, a network of regional offices, extremist group. It is a major challenge for Navalny's embattled team, with its leader in prison, dozens more of its members under arrest, and targeted for raids by law enforcement or facing criminal charges already. The Kremlin said on Monday that Russia and the United States had not yet agreed on a date and a place for a summit meeting of U.S. President Joe Biden and President Vladimir Putin, and that many factors still needed to be looked at before it's finalized. A Kremlin aide said Sunday that the meeting could happen in June. The RIA news agency reported. Russia's newspaper cited unnamed sources saying Biden had offered Putin to meet on June 15th and 16th in a European country. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington today. It's Tuesday, April 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Tanzania's main opposition seeks a meeting with President Samia Suluhu Hassan.
Our main agenda is to revive the constitutional process so that we can get a new constitution which will have an independent electoral commission. That's the main agenda.
A Zimbabwe sculptor gains attention for works inspired by the coronavirus pandemic. Somalia's prime minister calls for calm after Sunday's political violence in Mogadishu. And analysts warn that continued clashes among Somali military forces may hurt ongoing reforms.
The incident of the 25th April 2021 showcases a split Somali security forces, which is unfortunate since the security forces should not be involved in politics.
A ladies' soccer team in Kenya helps curb teen pregnancy, and Senegalese divers and activists clean up the coastline for Earth Day. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Leaders of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party say they are waiting for a date and time to meet President Samia Suluhu Hassan. The planned meeting is expected to discuss what they say are matters of national significance, including press freedom, democratic and constitutional reforms, and the opening of political space for civil society and government opponents to operate freely. To learn more about the much-anticipated meeting with President Hassan, VOA's Peter Clotty reached John Mrema, Chadema's Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs, and Protocols.
During Magufuli period, we have written him about 4 or 5 letters, but he never even responded. But this new president, Samia Suluhu Hassan, she has responded immediately and she invited us. So we are now waiting. Our expectation is that we had 5 years with a very little democratic space. And the president admitted that in a public when he was addressing the parliament. But for us, we have our agenda. We are going to talk to her. We present our case and we discuss together on how best we think this country should be run.
As Chadema, what are some of the key issues you want to discuss with the newly installed president?
Our main agenda is to revive the constitutional process, so that we can get a new constitution which will have an independent electoral commission. That's the main key agenda.
What about some people calling for more democratic space to allow for civil society groups and opposition groups to operate freely without any possible crackdown by state authorities?
That is our primary agenda as well, because we are going forward to ask her that she should... First of all, open up the country so that people will have a free and the freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of media, freedom for civil society organizations. But also we will ask her to form a commission of inquiry. During Magufuli time, a lot of people in this country have disappeared. Some of them, they were journalists, politicians, activists. So we are going to discuss with her all those issues so that we can open up a new chapter for our country and for our people.
Her supporters are suggesting that the mere fact that she has accepted to hold a dialogue or to engage the main opposition party in Tanzania shows that she is willing and able and to ensure that you are heard. How do you respond to that?
It is true, and that's why we did take a step of writing her a letter so that we can meet with her and discuss. We have a lot of pending issues in this country. A lot of things have happened for the last 5 years. So we need to have a dialogue, a round table dialogue, and discuss these issues for the benefit of this country. Because the way the country was governed for the last 5 years, for us, it was the worst situation. We don't want it to come again. And I think when we meet her, we will put all things on her table. And then we discuss and then we see what we will get after that.
That was John Mrema, Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols for Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty from Dar es Salaam. Somalia's Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein Roble has called for calm and dialogue after clashes on Sunday in the capital Mogadishu between backers and opponents of President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, also known as Farmajo. Analysts worry that the political standoff over parliament's term extension for Farmajo could quickly turn into an armed conflict. Mohamed Kahir reports from Mogadishu.
Roble says he was saddened by overnight violence in the capital, Mogadishu, between the government security agencies and forces from the opposition. He added that dialogue and understanding are the only ways to resolve the stalemate. Clashes were reported at the home of opposition Wadajir Party leader Abdulrahman Abdishakur and at the home of former President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud. The former president is among those who oppose Farmajo's term extension. Somali opposition leaders have blamed Farmajo and security forces for the fighting, but Security Minister Hassan Hundube denies the accusations and blames the opposition. The crisis is related to delayed elections. Somalia's parliamentary and presidential elections have been held up for months because of disputes over the electoral process. The stalemate took a new turn this month after the lower house of parliament voted to extend the mandate of President Farmajo's government for 2 years. Opposition lawmakers who were already against Farmajo's staying in office strongly rejected the move, as the international community also warned against its effect on Somalia's stability. Mohamed Hassan Idris, a member of opposition party, says the government is not ready for dialogue due to its actions regarding the violence in the capital.
His appreciation of the operation by the security forces, clarifying that he isn't calling to calm the situation. Instead, he's encouraging the ongoing illegal operation that aimed to secure the unconstitutional extension.
The African Union last week urged Somali leaders to resume the election talks, rejecting the extension of Farmajo's mandate. Its envoy is expected to visit Somalia in the next coming weeks. Afiare Elmi is the Associate Professor of Security Studies at Qatar University. He says dialogue is the only way out to avoid armed clashes seen in Mogadishu on Sunday.
I think there is only one way out of the situation at the moment, and that is to go back to the negotiating table and resolve the political conflict and the election issues that have triggered the violence in the first place.
The UN office in Somalia urges maximum restraint by all parties while calling on all sides to immediately resume dialogue. Mohamed Kahir for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
The Somali capital, Mogadishu, was calm on Monday, but the renewed clashes between rival military forces created an unease among Somali military commanders. Analysts are concerned that if the clashes continue, it may permanently split the army, which has been undergoing reform in the past few years. VOA's Haroon Maruf spoke with Jihan Abdullahi Hassan, former advisor to the Somali Ministry of Defense.
Over the past few years, we have witnessed an election every 4 years per our provisional constitution. Those elections ensured a peaceful transfer of power. However, this election season of 2020-2021, this has not been the case. There has been prolonged political stalemate between the Somali leaders. This unfortunately created uncertainty for not only the Somali people, but for the Somali security forces. The incident of the 25th April 2021 showcases a split Somali security forces, which is unfortunate since the security forces should not be involved in politics.
And what's going to happen to the army if the standoff and the political stalemate continues?
If the current standoff between the security forces continues and there's no political agreement, this will create many fractions between our security forces, which will undo all the progress we've made over the past few years. If this standoff is not resolved, the earliest possible, it will dismantle the security forces, which will be difficult for any administration to resolve.
How does this affect the war on Al-Shabaab?
The fight against Al-Shabaab should be prioritized since we know the threat they pose on the Somali security and also that of our neighboring countries. The incident on the 25th April 2021 in Mogadishu showcases that the fight on Al-Shabaab is not a current priority. We have witnessed forces vacating front operating bases, which will create a security vacuum for the civilians living in those areas. Al-Shabaab still pose a threat to our capital city, Mogadishu, especially, as you know, this Ramadan period. And the unity of our security forces will be key in combating the threat Al-Shabaab pose.
That was Jihan Abdullahi Hassan, former advisor to the Somali Ministry of Defense. She was speaking with viewers Haroon Maruf from the Somali capital, Mogadishu. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 27. A Cameroonian startup has created a mobile application that detects animal diseases and proposes treatment. The app, which works even without a network, is changing the lives of farmers living far from urban centers. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has this report by Anne Unzuanku in Douala.
Cameroon rabbit breeder Thierry Bayabong lost 3/4 of his stock to disease a few months ago. Like most small-scale Cameroonian farmers, he was not familiar with diseases that affect animals. Bayabong says the deaths could have been prevented, but it took too long to find a veterinarian to visit his remote farm. He says 2 weeks after the cases, as the situation was getting worse, he was successful in getting a veterinarian. The vet came on site and was able to determine the problem. To help breeders like Bayabong avoid such costly losses, a Cameroonian startup designed the free online application Veto. The app analyzes audio questions about symptoms, gives treatment advice, and helps breeders and ranchers share information. It also allows them to send photos and videos to actual veterinarians like Mangwa Cedric for analysis.
In those villages, they have no vet personnel, and with an advent of a zoonotic disease like tuberculosis, I mean, you taking the picture for the analysis may help you save lives, because zoonoses are diseases that attack both human or that are transmissible between animals to humans.
The Veto app's main challenge is that it requires an internet connection, which is expensive and hard to come by in Cameroon's remote villages. The app's developers say they are working on the problem so it can be useful to more people raising livestock.
Actuellement, nos équipes en recherche développement se mobilisent activement.
Franklin Jomo, chief marketing officer for Veto, says currently their research and development teams are actively working to develop a module that is not connected to the internet so that it can operate in rural areas without the need for the internet. While the veterinary diagnostic app has connection limitations, its practical use is not limited to Cameroon or even West Africa. The Veto app is currently available in Cameroon's official languages, French and English, and also in Arabic and Swahili. For Anne Zwanke in Douala, Cameroon, Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News.
Zimbabwean sculptor David Ngwerume is calling attention for works inspired by the coronavirus pandemic. One of his collections urges people to get vaccinated. Another reminds people to take health measures as he hammers home a message to curb the spread of the virus. Ngwerume's latest piece is Michael Jackson, named after the late U.S. pop icon who was well known for wearing masks and a glove. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Year-old Zimbabwean sculptor David Ngwerume is making what he calls COVID-19 gallery. His exhibit called Arms encourages people to take the COVID-19 jab to help the country reach its vaccination target of 60% by the end of the year. Another one called We Are Torn encourages people to sneeze into their elbows. And the most talked about one encourages people to mask up in an exhibit called MJ, named after the late U.S. pop icon Michael Jackson.
The iconic Michael Jackson was the first celebrity and public figure to move around wearing a mask and gloves. And when he was asked, he stood by his ground that the air somehow is polluted. Michael Jackson used his public figure position to highlight what he was seeing as what would come with the times. That is, now we have the COVID pandemic. We are now wearing masks. At that time, people thought maybe he was trying to show off, but yeah, he warned us. Now, I'm using his figure around this COVID pandemic on my art to show that Michael Jackson gave us a warning that mask up, and his figure shows a finger pointing out to us as a people saying mask up.
Ngwerume has posted his pieces online to keep most people from coming to his studio and potentially spreading the coronavirus that causes the COVID-19 disease. Speaking via Skype, New York-based art dealer Shingirai Mafara says he wants to hold an art exhibition to display the work of his fellow Zimbabwean for a wider reach.
So I find these pieces very, very pivotal in terms of not just putting back Zimbabwean art sculpture on the map, because we're definitely back on the map, but also setting awareness to the entire world. Let's get vaccinated, let's wear masks, let's social distance, let's hold hands and try to get through this together. These pieces are going to sit one day in the permanent collection of whether the United Nations, the World Health Organization, or at a private collector's residence. The works that David has created, 100, 200 years from now, you can look back and say in 2020, 2021, we had a pandemic that killed millions and millions of people.
Ngwerume's work has also caught the attention of a Zimbabwe government official. Josiah Kusena is the acting director of the National Arts Council of Zimbabwe.
The situation has taught our artists to be resilient, taught them to be imaginative and to be creative in terms of sustenance and how do you make a livelihood in such an environment, which is not easy to operate when sources of income, creating money or making money has been closed totally. So that creativity by this artist is not a surprise at all. It's also an appreciation by the artist that COVID-19 has destroyed livelihoods. But it's also an appreciation that there's been progress in research in terms of how do you contain COVID-19.
Ngwerume says he hopes to work with art auctioneers and use part of the proceeds to get personal protective equipment or PPEs for Zimbabwe's health workers. Zimbabwe's doctors and nurses have struggled due to lack of adequate resources while working in the front lines of prevention and treatment during the coronavirus pandemic. Zimbabwe has more than 38,000 confirmed coronavirus infections and 1,550 deaths, according to the Johns Hopkins University, which is tracking the global outbreak. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Senegal banned single-use plastics a year ago, but the regulation has been poorly enforced, and plastic waste still litters the coastline and threatens health. This past Earth Day, a group of surfers, scuba divers, and activists took matters into their own hands to set an example for others to follow. Annika Hamishla reports from Dakar.
A group of surfers and members of the Barracuda Scuba Diving Club wade into the ocean waters off Dakar. But on this sunny Saturday, they're not out for sport. They're out for garbage. They've joined activists to mark this year's Earth Day by cleaning up waste in the water, especially plastic that is building up along Senegal's coast. Clean Senegal's Khadim Diouf wore a plastic costume while sorting the waste to underscore the need to make an impact.
Je crois qu'on peut le faire.
He says he thinks they can do it, not just the citizens of Senegal, but the citizens of the world. Diouf says everyone must protect their environment. The evidence mounting on Senegal's coast shows the challenge they are facing. From bottles and bags to food wrappers and fishing nets, piles of garbage line the beaches, harming the environment that people and animals depend on. Toxic chemicals from plastic leach into the water and can build up in fish, which are a vital part of the Senegalese diet. Dr. Marie Remes Ngomenjai is the director of Senegal's public health department. She notes links between plastic pollution and infertility, heart disease, cancer, and other health problems. She says the products used by the plastic industry can be dangerous and that they can attack the organs of humans and animals alike. As we've seen in numerous documentaries and studies, says Ndiaye, they are especially harmful to marine life. Senegal passed a law in 2015 banning single-use plastics, but little changed. The law was rescinded to make way for a fresh ban that targeted plastic cups, straws, plates, bags, and bottles. It went into effect in 2020, but activists note it is rarely enforced. Aisha Conte is the president of Zero Waste Senegal. She says there isn't enough information. People aren't well enough informed about the law, says Conte, or its different statutes. Conte and other activists hope their coastal cleanup will help inform people and, more importantly, set an example for a cleaner Senegal that others will follow. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
As teenage pregnancies soar during coronavirus lockdowns in Africa's largest urban slum, Kibera, teachers and parents looked for a way to reduce the problem. Their idea was to form a ladies' football or soccer club to direct their energy in a healthy way, and they became so good that they are about to join Kenya's professional women's soccer league. Brenda Molina reports from Nairobi.
Nanu! In the heart of Africa's largest urban slum, Kibera, two amateur Kenyan football soccer teams, the Undugu Queens and the Queens Starlets, are playing a friendly game. The ladies' teams were formed as Kenyan authorities said teenage pregnancies jumped at least 40% during COVID lockdown measures. Founder and coach of the Undugu Queens Club, Laban Ouma, says the goal was to direct their energy in a healthy way.
The impact that this program gives to the girl is that it is protecting them from the ills within the social structure where we are living. We are living in an environment full of drug and substance abuse. We have early pregnancies too.
16-year-old Winfred Nyaboke joined the Undugu Queens in late 2020 after her 15-year-old best friend Ruth got pregnant. Kenya's schools have been closed during the pandemic to curb the spread of the coronavirus. But teenagers left at home while parents work led to a surge in teen pregnancies and school dropouts like Ruth. Nyaboke says Ruth refused to join the football team, deciding to play with boys instead, and ended up pregnant. I decided to keep myself busy with football, she says. I knew it would keep me from falling into the same trap. The Undugu Queens practice every day of the week and have games every weekend. A parent of one of the players, Rose Nguli, sells snacks on the sidelines while the young women play football. She says the demanding schedule helps keep their daughter safe and healthy. She says they are very thankful when the girls are playing football because they will not leave the pitch to go and engage in destructive behavior. The football club also offers a mentorship program for schoolwork as well as access to menstrual health care products. But some players still become pregnant. 16-year-old Lavin Ondaki is back on the team after delivering her baby. She says she was forced to stop playing football after getting pregnant. But now that her baby is a bit older, Ondaki says she can play once again. The team's hard work appears to be paying off. The Undugu Queens are set to join the Nairobi County Women's Football League after the coronavirus suspension of sports events is lifted. Brenda Molina for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that's it for this Tuesday, April 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a good day.